Finance Committee to order. Time is 6 minutes after 9 a.m., March 19th, 2012. With me today is Senator Hoffman, Senator Ellis, Senator Olson, Senator Thomas, Senator Egan, and myself, Stedman. We're going to continue the work today on the CS for Senate Bill 192, Resources, Oil, and Gas Production Tax. And we're going to have the public hearing portion this morning, and we're going to finish the morning meeting here in 2 hours. Then we'll reconvene at 1 p.m. today and continue public testimony, and then that'll end on the public testimony today. So we're going to go ahead and start, but I just want to remind everybody online that's listening, we're going to want to keep our comments. I'm getting quite a list here, but initially we're going to start with 2 minutes, and I'm going to ask you to stick within your 2 minutes. If you don't, I'm going to have to terminate your testimony and go on to the next one, or we were not going to have enough time for everybody to have their time to say their 2 cents. The LIO offices will help in the timing, and the LIO officers then should terminate you promptly at 2 minutes. I'm going to work down the list. I'll pick particular LIOs, and I'll walk down the list, so you should be able to have a pretty good idea of when you're going to come up. And then when we get to the off-net, it'll be a little bit more difficult. But I will, again, require that the comments stay within 2 minutes, and we'll go from there. And I'd like to have the testimony succinct on the Senate bill in front of us, Senate Bill 192, succinct as possible. I recognize it's a very complicated subject matter, and the level of and degree of knowledge, detailed knowledge in it varies depending on a particular person's background and interests. But try to keep it on point as much as possible would be appreciated, and it'd be much more beneficial to the committee members also in deliberating on this issue as we go forward the next couple weeks and work on this bill. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and start in Anchorage with Maynard Tapp. You'll start by identifying yourself, and then the clock will start, and you'll have 2 minutes to do your testimony. So if we could please start with Maynard Tapp, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Maynard Tapp. I'm representing myself. Can you hear me okay? No.
Go ahead and continue, please.
Oh, okay. Last time I testified, I suggested 3 things. Get rid of bases, find a policy that flattens out production from state lands, and find a way to meet the governor's 1.0 million barrels per day goal. Today I want to give you some things to think about, to ask your consideration. Number one, what made the largest investors in our state adversaries rather than our friends, which they have been for over 40 years? To me, it doesn't seem fair that we take billions of dollars from our partners and friends, and just because we can, pass an unfair law. How much of the ACES tax has been used for exploration and production, increasing Alaska's ability to survive the next 50 years? As you know, the Constitution requires the development of Alaska's resources. Sometimes when I'm in a negotiation, I physically move to get on the other side of the table with the person I'm working with, so that we can, as partners, we can then focus on the problem that is on the table. Our problem is not short-term gains, but long-term fiscal help to the state of Alaska. Thank you for your service and allowing me to testify.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Tapp. Next up, Brad Lipscomb.
Hi, it is great pleasure to be here and to testify today. My name is Brad Lipscomb, and I was born here in Anchorage and graduated from Service High School. My father, Jeff Lipscomb, has worked in the Alaska oil industry since the initial startup of North America's largest oil field, Prudhoe Bay, in 1977. As a youngster, I remember going and seeing turbine and sea lift modules being built right here in Anchorage. I was intrigued by the massive operations and the logistics, engineering, and operations involved in building these complex structures that put many people to work every day. Loving Alaska, I was very happy that my hometown university had the degree program that I wanted to study. The in-state tuition was just one of the many reasons why I chose to stay here in Alaska. Once I completed my degree in global logistics management, I was ready to go out and join the workforce with a class size of only 12 with getting degrees in logistics. While most of my classmates were able to find entry-level jobs, I was not one of the lucky ones. I found it extremely challenging to get my foot in the door, and with many oil companies in Alaska without much relative experience. I was actively seeking employment in other oil-rich countries all over the world, including Australia, Germany, and Russia. Fortunately, I was eventually blessed with a job offer from a company right here in Anchorage. It was CHGM Hill, working in their procurement department. My biggest concern for the future employment of my generation, which was hit hard during the recession, is the lack of new oil production in Alaska. I'm afraid that if when I start my family here, there will be no jobs available. Big projects employ hundreds of direct and indirect jobs. This is extremely important since our state is a resource-rich state. We need to reverse the decline of exploring for new oil. I want to stay in Alaska, but if we don't have new oil production, I will be forced out to find new opportunities, including North Dakota. I know the Whitehead family that moved out of Alaska for work, and now they're working in North Dakota in the oil field. We cannot expect to have the highest oil taxes in North America and expect to attract a lot of new capital. Thanks again for the opportunity to let us speak today.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony this morning. Keith Silver, please.
Good morning. My name is Keith Silver, a constituent of Senator McGuire's here in Anchorage. This is my second time testifying on SB 192, having done so recently to the Senate Resources Committee. 65% of those testifying to the committee agreed that SB 192 is not the answer. I'm a small businessman located in the corner of Lake Otis and Abbott, and how this committee treats SB 192 will determine whether to hire more staff or lay off some current staff. We are to that point. SB 192 does not make meaningful changes in the progressivity feature formulas and ACEs and should be scrapped in favor of something like HB 110. To do so otherwise will demonstrate that the Alaska State Senate has no intention of improving the investment climate for mature resource development projects like those in Prudhoe Bay. Failure to make meaningful changes in progressivity will continue the graveyard spiral that Alaska state economy is sliding into. A fellow legislator was quoted on Friday the 16th as saying, "With declining oil production, the state relies heavily on oil revenues. The state could be in deficit spending in the next few years." The legislator went on to say the state must make sure it has money available to provide the services Alaskans want. The government's take remains too high under the proposed CS. It encourages a harvest mode that realizes short-term gain for the state at the expense of increased long-term production revenue. If our government's take remains too high, that Alaska continues to deter investment to other energy jurisdictions, we are only harming ourselves by guaranteeing an accelerated oil production decline. The oil industry will simply invest in other places that offer a better return on investment. Our current tax structure was designed to make us competitive for investment when oil is at $60 to $80 a barrel, not above that. We must not be provincial in our approach, as we are producing a world market commodity. I urge you to act now to correct the overreach of ACEs. We don't need any more expensive studies to help you decide on the proper course of action. You didn't need such studies when you passed ACEs in 3 weeks. Thank you much for your time.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Silver. Ben Paca.
Good morning. My name is Ben Paca. I'm 23 years old, and I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I've lived in many parts of the state, everywhere from Homer to Wasilla, where I currently reside. In 2007, I graduated from Colony High School, got married, and began studying at UAF in the mechanical engineering program. UAF has a great engineering program, but that isn't the only reason I chose engineering. All through high school, I'd heard about all the opportunity for engineers to stay and work here in Alaska near family and friends, but when I began looking for jobs, this didn't seem to be the case. I started applying for positions about a semester before I was to graduate. I applied for many different jobs, most of them oil and gas related, both in-state and out-of-state. After several months with very few prospects arising, I became aware of exactly how challenging it is to enter the job market in Alaska. Much of the opportunity is in places like Texas and North Dakota, and I got a job offer there, though I turned it down. Fortunately, I was able to find a position with CH2M Hill here in state, but many Alaskans have not been so fortunate. The current oil tax policy and proposed future oil tax policies make me concerned for the financial well-being of my state and my family. As the level of production declines, so too does the ability for our state to remain competitive in the oil and gas arena without new oil field development. It is critical that the state provide incentive for future expansion and new production in order to ensure a stable and prosperous state economy for the long term. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Ben. Carl Portman, please.
Good morning. Co-chairs Stedman and Hoffman and members of the committee, my name is Carl Portman and I am testifying on my own behalf. I am a lifelong Alaskan raised on a homestead in the interior and a proud graduate of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I plan to remain in Alaska during my retirement years as this is my home and I love the state. I very much care about its future. I would also like to note that I very much appreciate the public service of every member of this committee. Turning to the critical issue before us today, I urge the committee to pass legislation that results in meaningful reform of Alaska's oil production tax regime. To me, meaningful reform is significant change that will improve Alaska's competitive position globally in attracting the investment needed to stem the decline and increase production over the long term. I am willing to accept lower revenues in the short term for long-term gain. The investors have made clear that the committee substitute to SB 192 will not provide the meaningful changes needed to improve Alaska's investment climate and reverse the production decline. I urge the committee to listen to the investors and respond with reform that will move the needle in the direction which makes Alaska a most compelling place to invest. I appreciate the opportunity to express my views to this committee. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. Next up, Bo Obrich.
Bo Obrigiewicz?
Yep.
I'm representing myself. Thank you, committee chairs, Senator Stedman and Senator Hoffman, for this opportunity to publicly speak out in favor of meaningful tax reform and therefore in opposition to Senate Bill 192. To quote current leadership, you've got some nerve. The nerve to call for public testimony on the Monday after spring break. The nerve to call for public testimony at 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. The nerve to announce on the Friday prior this opportunity to speak out. I was made aware only of a call from the Alaska Oil and Gas Association and by the Dave Stearns Show. One question needs to be asked. Why do you keep soliciting expert testimony? As far as I can tell, the only two experts in favor of no changes to the oil taxes are two tax attorneys. Two paid experts have provided answers to the Senate Bipartisan Anti-Work Coalition, that's my term, and they're blatantly ignoring those answers. Pedro Van Meers and more recently Gerald Kepps, both paid consultants, have recommended tax reductions. I was concerned last time I spoke publicly, and I'm still concerned. I'm concerned the public in Alaska do not fully understand the overwhelmingly positive impact the oil industry has on our state. There's an easy description of this. The 2012 operating budget just passed out of the House is $9.5 billion and growing unsustainably. It is a well-known, well-discussed fact that the oil industry funds upwards of 90% of the state budget. Let's say that's $8.55 billion. This is after we take one-eighth of it for a permanent fund. The 2010 census in Alaska is 710,000 individuals. This means that $12,038 on behalf of every man, woman, and child in Alaska is paid for by the oil industry. I don't know how long my wife and I can stay in Alaska when TAPS is shut down and it costs us an additional $25,000 per year to live here. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony this morning. Next up, Tim Coe.
Good morning. My name is Tim Coe. I was raised in the Mat-Su Valley and graduated from Wasilla High School. I received my civil engineering degree from the University of Alaska Anchorage, and I'm currently working on my master's in engineering management. I work for CH2M Hill, managing projects that work to engineer solutions to provide safe and uninterrupted oil production on the North Slope. What concerns me is that 90% of Alaska's revenue comes from oil, but at the same time, our declining oil production is putting that very pipeline that funds our state in jeopardy. We must make Alaska competitive so we can attract new investments into oil exploration and reverse the declining oil flow before the Trans-Alaska pipeline shuts down. We need to look past the large revenue we can obtain at harvest and make changes to the tax system that will protect the future for many generations to come. I would personally love to be a part of securing Alaska's future by working on new oil projects that will competitively increase Alaska's oil production. As a young Alaskan, I'm opposed to Senate Bill 192 in its current form and ask that you give your full support in making the changes necessary to make this bill viable for Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Coe. Next up, Ginger Kane.
Good morning. My name is Ginger Kane, and I am currently a project engineer for CH2M Hill working in their Anchorage office. I'm a second-generation born and raised Alaskan. My parents, Will and Judy Fryer, met on the slope during the original construction in the 1970s, and my dad is still working for BP here in Anchorage today. My husband works for Halliburton and has recently moved from the slope to a town position, lucky for me. After graduating from Service High School and the University of Virginia, I'm lucky to live and work in the state that I love. I've worked for CH2M Hill now for 5 years, moving from engineering into project management. I'm enjoying working with a lot of people that I knew from high school. We all found it easy during the time that we graduated to come back home after college and find jobs in the oil industry. The younger generation is, we're even starting to balance out the older generation at CH. Hopefully, when my sister finishes her engineering degree, she'll find work up here, too. I know that right now it's not the same climate that she'll graduate in as when I graduated. One of my biggest concerns going forward is the lack of new North Slope production-related projects. In my 5 years with CH, I have worked on a number of low-flow oil-related projects, including installing heaters on the pipeline, but I have never worked on a new pipeline, new production project. I would like to have the experience on new drilling and production jobs to keep my husband and I employed right here in Anchorage. In summary, I hope to be able to stay here and raise a family. I ask that you look at the full picture of Alaskans that are supporting the oil industry and consider the need for new production to keep the oil industry booming and the younger generation employed right here in Alaska. Hopefully, everyone can work together and get a Senate bill that works for everyone. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony this morning. Dave Hopkins, please.
My name is David Hopkinson. I'm the Vice President of Construction for CH2M Hill, Alaska. I first began working in Alaska on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline in Valdez in 1974. Since that time, I've had the opportunity to work on a vast majority of the major North Slope projects. I've also worked in Sakhalin, Russia for more than 4 years on major new development projects. These opportunities have given me 38 years of oil field construction experience. CH2M Hill supports many aspects of oil development in Alaska, from engineering to fabrication to installation to operations and maintenance. To be successful, we hire, we develop, and we train Alaskans. However, the current outlook for new construction work in fabrication and field installation is the lowest that I have seen in Alaska. A year ago, we had over 500 people working on new oil field projects, both in our Anchorage fabrication shop and on the North Slope. In contrast, today we have no personnel working on new oil projects, and there are no new oil project developments in Alaska to deploy our long-term employees. To fill that gap, we are redeploying personnel outside of Alaska to keep our talent pool working and to remain a viable construction company. The oil industry is booming in many other North America locations. For example, my construction director is now working in our Alberta office to expand their fabrication facilities. In contrast, our fabrication shop in Anchorage is at its all-time low for work. This facility has been utilized for more than 20 years to fabricate hundreds of modules sent to the North Slope. The fabrication facility has historically provided high-paying, skilled labor positions for many Alaska families. In addition to Alberta, we are actively pursuing major opportunities in North Dakota and other locations with our highly skilled Alaska personnel. North Dakota should overtake Alaska as the second largest U.S. producer within months. In my opinion, we can get some major short-term production increase by doing infill drilling in Prudhoe Bay, Kaparik, and Alpine. Increased drilling will provide additional fabrication and construction opportunities. In other words, increased drilling related to production will positively drive jobs in Alaska. I love everything about building in Alaska.
We're going to treat everybody the same and try to hold it to 2 minutes, please. We're now going to go to Matt Sue. James Garhart, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. He had to step out of the room for a moment. Could we perhaps go back to him?
Yes, we'll then run up to Fairbanks. Jim Plaquette. In Fairbanks.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee. My name is Jim Plackey. I'm a 38-year member of the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 302. I agree with Governor Parnell that the state legislature must act this year to address production taxes in order to spur oil industry investment. The government takes remains too high under the proposed CS. It encourages a harvest mode that realizes short-term gain for the state at the expense of increased long-term production and revenue. We know there are billions of barrels of oil remaining in the North Slope fields. It will be challenging and expensive to develop, and some of it will require new technology. Today's historically high oil prices should be spurring the investments needed to produce more oil. Yet we are not seeing this type of increased investments on the slope that have led to a new boom in oil production elsewhere. The single biggest reason is that the ACES tax increase passed in 2007 has stifled investments. Under ACES, high oil prices do not incentivize new investment, and Alaska is losing out as a result. The industry has identified at least $5 billion worth of growth projects that could proceed if there is a real tax reform in the state. If our government take remains so high that Alaska continues to deter investment to other energy jurisdictions, we are only harming ourselves by guaranteeing an accelerated oil production decline. The oil industry will simply invest in other places that offer a better return on investment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for letting me testify.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony this morning. Let's jump to the off-net. Barbara Gasaway, please.
Hello?
Yes, if you can identify yourself for the record and speak to the bill, please, and keep your comments to within 2 minutes.
My name is Barbara Gasaway. I live in Anchorage, and I'm a mother. I have children. We live in Alaska, and couple of grandkids here in Alaska. I'm a retired teacher. Thank you for the opportunity, Senator, to speak, and thank you for your work in this important issue. For years, the oil companies have been telling us that any change in Alaska's tax structure, increasing taxes on the industry, would result in grave consequences, including fewer jobs and less production. Today, it's no different. There was a fight over oil taxes in 1989. Newspaper ads warned of how other regimes were more competitive than Alaska. There was another fight involving Wally Hickel in 1994, the same threat. At the end of 2002, Alaska had a deficit of nearly $400 million. In 2010, we had the Faces of Aces ad during a time when the oil industry was bringing in strong Alaska profits. That same year, the Alaska Revenue Commissioner issued a status report. Overall, this information reviewed by the department indicates that ACES is performing as expected. In the coming days, Senator, it's imperative that you take as much time as necessary on Senate Bill 192 in order to make well-informed, reasonable changes to Alaska's oil tax structure that is fair to both the state and the industry. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Barbara, this morning. Hal Gazaway, please.
Mr. Co-Chair, Hoffman and Stedman, thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. Senate Bill 192 more than adequately addresses the criticism of progressivity in ACEs at the higher prices. All the other criticisms are demonstrably false or artificially created by the big oil company producers. The oil company producers have their employees, their lobbyists, their service providers' employees, calling to persuade you to lower the government take under ACEs. But experience guides our business decisions. Our experience says, under ELF, big oil companies did not stop the rate of oil production decline. Under the corrupt bastards club tax, big oil companies did not stop the rate of oil production decline. Even under House Bill 110, the big oil companies would not agree to stop the rate of production decline. That is a natural phenomenon of oil fields. It's a result of not developing new fields and new wells. Now,
Mr. Gazaway, can I get you to identify yourself, please, for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Hal Gazaway from Muldoon. I'm a self-employed attorney.
Okay, thank you.
I ask you to hear but do not follow the advice of the big oil companies and their employees, their lobbyists, their suppliers, and their employees. I ask instead that you hear, listen to the remarks of Alaska at the Alaska Constitutional Convention by Senator and then Congressional Delegate Bob Bartlett when he said large grants of land would be conferred upon the state in order that it may be provided with a sound economic base. Now, Senator Bartlett went on to warn the story of Alaskan resources is too often one of exploitation with little of the great wealth going to pay for necessary governmental services or permanent development of a sound economy.
Mr. Gazaway, could I get you
the voices of our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren?
Mr.
Use
Gazaway,
Alaska to share the development of our natural resources for
Mr. Gazaway, can I get you to finish up your testimony?
To grow, strengthen,
and
diversify.
Okay. Again, we need to try to stay within in 2 minutes, please. In the off-net, Javon Ose, O-S-E, from Anchorage, please.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. If you can introduce yourself first and then speak to the bill, please.
Yes, gentlemen, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Javon Ose. I'm a citizen of Anchorage here for about 55 years. I have worked in the oil patch, and one of the first things they tell you in the oil patch is all the roughnecks learn, if you can't do it, you can't stay. So there's no can'ts in the oil fields. My comment is purely stick to your guns. You're on the right path. ACES is working despite all the other verbiage, and Alaska is a sovereign. Exercise your sovereignty or learn how to genuflect and curtsy. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony this morning. We're going to jump back to Matt Sue. James Garhart, please.
Yes, my name is James Garhart, known as Lazy Mountain Jim, and I'm here representing Sanity. At a minimum, we must inflation-proof progressivity. That way, when oil prices rise due to inflation, the taxes paid do not increase disproportionately. Now, some say we should not, quote, give, unquote, money to the producers without guarantees of increased production. Now, when they use the word give, however, it is in the Orwellian, doublethink, newspeak meaning, replacing the reality of taking less from the producers in taxes. I propose we actually give the producers money. I hope we can give them multiple billions of dollars. The billions we would give them, however, would be in the form of rebates. Now, at 600,000 barrels production, we brought in $8 billion in restricted and unrestricted revenue. So 50,000 barrels a day brought in two-thirds of $1 billion. What we do is, as they increase production, when they achieve levels at 50,000 barrels a day, we give them a rebate. 650,000 barrels, we get two-thirds of $1 billion gross revenue. We rebate them, I'm just using as an example, $250 million. We gross two-thirds of $1 billion, and we net over $400 million. At 700,000 barrels a day, we would get $1.25 billion gross. We give them a $500 million rebate, and we net over $800 million. Now, oddly enough, with this program at 1 million barrels of production, they would get $2 billion in rebates. We would gross $5.25 billion and net $3.25 billion after giving them the rebate. Now, I use numbers as a concept, but it would actually have to be worked out as a percentage because the price going up and down throws a set number off. Rebating some portion of the increased revenues collected on new production after it is achieved seems to me a logical, workable solution.
Mr. Garhart, could you please sum up your testimony, please?
Okay, so 50,000 barrels a day brings in two-thirds of $1 billion. Any monetary incentive that they get over two-thirds of $1 billion that does not result in increased production of at least 50,000 barrels would be a loss for Alaska.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony this morning. We'll go back to Anchorage LIO. Tom Maloney, please. Anchorage LIO.
By way of background, I'm a CPA, CMA, and CFP. First of all, I very much appreciate the work that the Senate is continuing to put into this complex subject.
Would you start again, please?
Okay. We're starting over again. Good morning. My name is Tom Maloney. I'm the Alaska Area Manager for CH2M Hill and live and work in Anchorage. By way of professional background, I'm a CPA, CMA, and CFP. First of all, I very much appreciate the work that the Senate is continuing to put into this complex subject. The presentations in Senate Labor, Resources, and now Finance demonstrate just how challenging taxes can be. This is particularly the case as Alaska is both the owner of the resource and the taxing and regulatory authority over the exploration, development, and production of that resource. In my opinion, Commonwealth North did an excellent job in preparing a March 2011 report entitled Alaska Oil Investment Tax Structure, Establishing a Competitive Alaska. The report was co-chaired by two great Alaskans, Joe Beadle and Cheryl Fresca. I agree with all three of the principal recommendations of the report. Financial folks, myself included, always like to model the future. History shows that we frequently overestimate future income and underestimate expenses. On page 12 of the North report, it states, the Department of Revenue's forecasts have been too high 100% of the time. We should expect it with no change in investment for actual production to be below the DOR forecast. As an example, in 2005, the prediction was TAPS would average 832,000 barrels a day in 2010. Actual production was 644,000 barrels, 22% less than forecasted. Alaskans like me and my family are not fine with accelerated production decline. Tax policy must change in a way that reflects the important role production and drilling has in Alaska's economy. Investors take 100% of the risk to lease, explore, and develop a resource. At high prices, government can take more than 80% of the income stream of a barrel of oil. Would anyone listening to this testimony with their own real estate stock or other investments give the government almost all the upside while taking nearly all the downside? We have a need to drill to pay the bill. I hope the legislature will take significant proactive steps this year to address the steep decline in oil production. Let's encourage more private investment, more jobs, and a brighter future for our kids and grandkids. After all, I have a 19-year-old son majoring in welding and non-destructive testing at UAA who's very concerned about future employment opportunities in Alaska. Thanks again for all your hard work.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Continuing on in the Anchorage area, Katie Capozzi. Capozzi, C-A-P-O-Z-Z-I.
Hi, thank you. Good morning. My name is Katie Capozzi. I'm representing myself, and I'm here to testify against the CSSB 192. I don't think that it makes meaningful enough change. I appreciate that the issue is extremely complex, but now is not the time to dilly-dally and make small changes that aren't really going to have a big effect. We need something that's going to really move the needle, and this committee substitute doesn't do that. I'd like to pretty much echo what almost every single person has said this morning, minus two, and that is that it's time. It's time to actually be bold. That's what we elected you to do. So you have consultants who've told you that this isn't going to work. You have graphs that tell you that we're not competitive nationally or globally. And finally, you have a lot of constituents, the majority of your constituents, who tell you that we need something else. So that is what I have for you this morning. Thank you for your service to the state.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Jeff Lentfer.
Thank you, Chairman Stedman and Hoffman, for letting us testify today. My name is Jeff Lentfer. I'm representing myself, and I'm the owner of Midas Alaska. We have eight repair and maintenance shops spread out throughout the state. We employ about 75 people in communities in Anchorage, Eagle River, Palmer, Wasilla, Soldotna, and Fairbanks. And like many other folks around around here, we're definitely concerned with Senate Bill 192 and the effect it's not going to have. One thing I think it's important to note is please don't think that because there's not a lot of other oil folks testifying against Senate Bill 192 that speaks it's just the oil folks that are concerned with this. When I talk to my friends and other business owners, they're definitely concerned, and it's difficult to get them out here to testify on short notice and during the day, but I definitely appreciate the chance that we have to testify. I do not support Senate Bill 192 as it's written. It does not create the needed kind of tax reform that's going to stimulate the investment in new projects and does not make us competitive with our peers. It's interesting that we reached out to the film industry and offered them tax incentives to come up to Alaska, and we've seen an increase in film activities up here. It's no different, I don't think, than with the oil industry. If you offer them incentives and don't disincentivize their investment and their production, you're going to see some increased activity. I don't think anybody's going to be able to promise 100% not knowing what's going to happen, but it's pretty much economic common sense. If you reduce the taxes, you're going to see more development. As a lifelong Alaskan with three kids, I hope that there's going to be future opportunities for development up here, and we need to make changes to Senate Bill 192 to make that happen. I encourage you to act quickly to get something done this session on Senate Bill 192, or better yet, take up House Bill 110 and support the governor's plan. It's there, and I think you all could work together to make that work, make a viable option to help the state have some more oil development. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Jeff. Winston Burbank, please.
I'm Winston Burbank, born and raised in Fairbanks, Alaska. Specialized in alternative energy during both my master's and PhD in mechanical engineering at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I share the wisdom of James T. Kirk when he says, I don't believe in no-win scenarios. While often difficult to find, win-win solutions usually exist. Understanding the motivations of each party help in finding win-win solutions, which in turn lead to long-term prosperity for all sides. The following is what I believe are the primary motivations of the oil corporations and the state of Alaska. We need to understand that an oil corporation's main objective is profit for its shareholders. Oil corporations evaluate resource economics on a global level. While Alaska has large oil resources, the path to production is economically uncertain and less competitive than other global options. Just because Alaska has oil doesn't mean it will be produced in a timely manner, if at all. The state of Alaska needs to be concerned with its 20-year future. This is a great responsibility placed on you, the legislators. Your constituents believe in you to put in the energy, time, and effort to find solutions for Alaska's long-term prosperity. I hope you share that motivation. Please think and act beyond a selfish two-year horizon. Ask yourselves, have you already thrown in the towel and expect the demise of Alaska's future? Or are you actively building a foundation for your grandchildren to prosper in the great state of Alaska? While there are no guarantees in the future, the state of Alaska really wants hope for long-term income achieved through long-term resource additions. I ask that the legislators prioritize the longevity of Alaska's future above their own short-term wants. Again, please incentivize oil corporations to increase production, which will help make Alaska's long-term future as prosperous as its past. In the words of Spock, may Alaska live long and prosper, although it seems more appropriate for that to be a question. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Now we'll move down to Ketchikan, LIO. Rennie Schofield, please.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. I want to speak on behalf of myself, Renee Schofield, and my daughters, Amber and Macy, who we affectionately refer to as the Minis. Because 90% of our budget is oil dollars, and Ketchikan enjoys so many projects because of those dollars, it's important that we get an oil tax policy that works and remains effective. Senate Bill 192, in my opinion, does not do that. The Minis don't understand oil tax policy, nor do they understand oil tax revenue, as most of us don't, because they are 6 and 3. What they do understand is potholes and swimming pools. So keeping that revenue intact and looking forward to the future for them and making sure that the oil revenue is maintained and new development is encouraged, my Minis will have a great opportunity to remain in Alaska for their future. I know this is a tough job, and I appreciate the effort that's going into this, and I thank you for your service.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. Now we're going to jump back up to Anchorage, LIO. Joe Beadle, please. Joe Beadle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joe Beadle. I'm president and CEO of Northrend Bank. I'm also president of the Alaska Bankers Association, a former president of Commonwealth North when the study that was referenced earlier by Tom Maloney was completed, former CEO of a Native corporation for 6 years, Gold Belt Native Corporation in Juneau, former CFO for the University of Alaska System Office. I come to you today to recommend and ask for your considered expansion of Senate Bill 192 so that meaningful amendments to motivate major oil producers can make a significant and positive difference and reverse the decline in oil production through increased investment. A comment regarding only 4 publicly traded companies headquartered in Alaska. Northrend Bank is one of 4. I regularly visit institutional investors outside the state at least 3 times a year. Normally, I'm an optimist and an evangelist for Alaska's outlook for business investment and growth, and do my part to motivate investment here. As I visit with these people, I have to be cautious today about the future. Absent immediate and material incentives for our largest industry to invest and grow. And I'm concerned that we can't get back our momentum for sustained economic growth without this bill taking amendments that will incent Alaskan oil production. Oil production and the part that it plays in Alaska is a very strong leg on the stool that supports our economy. And it is the elephant discussion that we have to have today. I was interrupted at 9:10 this morning by the birth of a second grandchild just an hour and a half ago. And I'm thinking in the long term for her, and I'm thinking in the long term for the business economy of the state. While I appreciate all of your studies, I hope that at this time in Senate Finance, you can make amendments to make this bill material and positive and that we as Alaska banks, which are unanimous in support of enhancements to oil tax legislation, can move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Beadle, and congratulations on your new granddaughter. I can assure you the legislature is looking out for the long-term view of Alaska. We'll next go to David Sturin, please.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Dave Sturin. I am a radio host here in Anchorage and a small business owner. And unless the economic climate changes in Alaska soon, I'll be declined on my small business loan from Northrim Bank. You have received testimony. I have a very good business plan. You've received testimony from individuals talking about how taxes haven't impacted production, and there may be some validity in those statements. However, prices haven't impacted production either. Texas, which has a legacy field, it slowed, it reversed, and plateaued the production curve, while members of the House and Senate have said that production curves are a foregone conclusion and there's nothing we can do to stem decline. We've had a bevy of experts testify who've come here globally to tell you what you have is a tax plan that is ideal for harvest mode. Indeed, in many of your own press releases that you send to my radio show, you tell me the producers are in harvest mode. But you neglect to include the fact that they're in harvest mode because of bills like Senate Bill 192 and ACEs that force them to grab all the oil they can and not make any long-term investment. I don't know what testimony is going to inspire you to make a difference. I don't know if that's going to happen in the 2012 legislature. I have a bet that says it isn't, but I don't want to gin my own money. So you do what you think is best. I will tell you this. Medical students aren't looking to come to Alaska. Long-term price-cost equalization isn't going to be funded by oil money when it goes away. Refurbishments of ports, roads, rail system, scholarships, domestic violence support, education, law enforcement, fish counting, whatever you want to do, once the savings dries up, isn't going to be paid by $25,000 a year in income taxes by your residents. You've been asked to ignore an industry that employs a third of the state. Now, I don't see a long line of federal employees showing up to testify because they don't care. The cruise ship people are busy getting their buses ready for tourists. So the only people who could take time off of work on a Monday morning after spring break are the people who desperately need an industry to pay 90% of the bills.
Mr. Stern, can I get you to sum up, please? Okay. Thank you for your testimony this morning. We'll jump up to Fairbanks. Ken Hall, please.
He's here.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk this morning. My name is Ken Hall. I live in Fairbanks. I was born and raised in Fairbanks, went to the University of Alaska up here in Fairbanks, and I've always worked in the private sector. I jotted down some notes here, probably not as polished as it could be. However, I spent yesterday at work, and I was at work this morning, so I could sneak off here for a few minutes yet today. Like every Alaskan, whether we want to admit it or not, we are all in the oil industry. Oil is king, and we need to maintain a oil industry, and oil and profits is not a four-letter word. There's no doubt the oil industry in Alaska has changed and will continue to change. As the industry changes on how they do business into Alaska, we need to have meaningful legislation that will capitalize on the industry and our position ourselves in the state of Alaska. Is Senate Bill 192 the vehicle to do this? There seems to be considerable question as whether it is or not. We need to have the flexibility and the stability to promote exploration, development, and production. All three of those need to happen. The Alaska Senate has the opportunity to correct legislation that has enacted in the past. Real corrections need to be made, but don't sacrifice short-term investment for long-term gains for the state. The legislature has studies that suggest that changes need to be made to Alaska's tax structure, both on exploration and production. We need to increase the volume of oil within the Alaska pipeline. experts have testified. We need to make these meaningful changes. Senate Bill 192 seems to fall short as a vehicle to make all these changes. I ask you to work together, both the industry and the legislature, to make meaningful changes to increase our production of oil in Alaska. Thank you very much for your contribution to the state. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hall, for your testimony today. We'll go now to the off-net. Tara Sweeney, please.
Good morning, Senator Stedman and members of the committee. My name is Tara Sweeney, and I'm the Senior Vice President for Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. As you know, ASRC is owned by and represents the business interests of approximately 11,000 Inupiat and is the largest Alaskan-owned company in the state. The ASRC family of companies employs approximately 10,000 people worldwide, with approximately 5,000 of our employees in Alaska. We have four major business segments, and they include energy services, petroleum refining and marketing, government services, and construction industries. The Arctic Slope region, also known as the North Slope, is dependent upon a responsible and robust oil and gas industry, as is the entire state of Alaska. The oil and gas industry provides meaningful employment and contracting opportunities for our shareholders and our family of companies. Employment and training opportunities for our people and all Alaskans empower our residents with the necessary skills and means to provide a quality of life for our families and build capacity within our communities. Services provided by thousands of Alaskan businesses further empower our organizations to return substantial benefits to our employees and communities within which we do business. Between 2005 and 2010, ASRC contributed over $17 million to nonprofit organizations across the state, including organizations like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Covenant House, Standing Together Against Rape, the Nature Conservancy, the Anchorage Urban League, and Special Olympics. In 2010 alone, ASRC's total payroll was over $630 million. And since 2005, ASRC has contributed over $550 million in revenue sharing to the 12 land-based regional Alaska Native corporations. These significant contributions to Alaska could not have been possible without the meaningful partnerships ASRC has had with the oil and gas industry. While these benefits are substantial, without a robust oil and gas industry in our state, our ability to maintain the level of these types of commitments is at risk. Our homegrown Alaskan businesses need more oil to fill the Trans-Alaska pipeline in order to survive. From our experience within this industry, a more attractive investment climate for oil production of legacy fields in our state is what will fill that pipeline. ASRC is concerned that this legislation does not go far enough to spur additional investment in legacy fields on the North Slope. It is important to note that HB 110 has been the only bill that has garnered industry support. Moreover, it is the only bill major producers have committed to for new production investment on the North Slope. Although our roots are most definitely Alaskan, ASRC does business all over the U.S. When considering how or where to invest our dollars, we consider the competitive investment and climate of the market to ensure that we are maximizing our returns to our people, region, and communities within which we do business.
Ms. Sweeney, can we get you to finish up, please?
Without meaningful reform, Alaska and Alaskans will suffer. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
And if your testimony runs longer, it appears that you're reading a statement, you can submit it to the committee, too. And that'd
you bet.
Be fine.
Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. We're going to stand at ease here for a moment. At ease. We're going to come back on record. We've got a couple people, and rather than having them sit in the off net on their phone, we're just going to go ahead and take their testimony. But in case they weren't on earlier today, we've got a strict 2-minute allocation per individual. Please start by identifying yourself and who you represent, and then speak to the bill. And the reason we're holding everybody at 2 minutes, so everybody has the same amount of time, and there's no shortage of time, so everybody has the opportunity then to testify. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and start with Rod McCoy, please. If you can identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and then speak to the bill, please.
Yeah. Rod McCoy. I am a citizen of Alaska, and I represent myself. And I'm just a strong believer, and I believe that the strength of being good stewards of our land and our state really came with Governor Wally Hickel. And I believe very strongly in that, and I think there is a lot of pressures on people to not be good stewards of this. I think the governor's office statement that if the taxation is, I'm in favor of 192, by the way, because the taxation in 110, they say, well, we could easily change it. That is not true in the political climate in Alaska. It is very much controlled by high money interests, and we cannot change it back, and the citizens of the state of Alaska will lose. That is a ruse that we could go back and change it. It also seems awkward to me that 110 offers to give away more money than what we would logically receive back. The math is simply not there. By the way, Norway, in their political structure, an agreement amongst politicians in Norway is to not bring oil industry politics into their political campaigns. And with that, they come to power on the strength of the citizens of the people of Norway and not on the strength of big money. We don't have that advantage here in this state. It was only a unique circumstance there during the Palin administration when the corruption scandal was such that it threw completely that power structure off base, that allowed us to put our taxes to where they are now, that are right in the middle of what is international and statewide as far as tax structure is concerned. And that's where it should be. We shouldn't seek to be to give away the most money to oil industry. We should seek to get our fair share. It is our oil.
Mr. McCoy, could I get you to sum up, please? Could I get you to sum up, please?
Yes. Just one last sum up. We must beware of the political structure in the state that puts a lot of strength on big corporations and power.
Okay.
And I thank you very much for your opportunity to speak to you today.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Next up, Charles Norton, please.
Yes, this is Charles Norton. I have been a resident of Alaska and voting citizen, actually a resident of Alaska, 10 years in the territory of Alaska, and the remainder of the time in the state of Alaska. I have many of the same opinions that Mr. McCoy has with regard to SB 192. I am in favor of voting yes on 192. I feel that SB 110 does give away much more money to the corporations, the oil corporations, and I hope that you will support SB 192. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We will now stand at ease. Back on the record, please. We've got three individuals at the Anchorage LIO, and for their information, we've got a two-minute limit. If you could keep your comments to 2 minutes, that's what we've been doing all morning to make it fair. If you could go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then speak to the bill, please, and your time will, by the way, will start after your introduction of yourself. Jim Unelhoven.
Good morning. This is Jim Unelhoven, and I live in Kasiloff, run a business in Anchorage, and been in business here 40 years, and I just want to go on the record to say that I'm opposed to Bill 192. It does not create jobs, you know, and I've got 7 children and a lot of grandchildren here, and I know in my business that the decisions that I make today affect me for years to come. And this is a decision of that nature. It's very important. And I support the governor's bill on the taxation. That will create jobs. And 3 and 4 and 5 years down the road, things will just keep getting better. We'll get production up in the pipeline. That affects all of Alaska. We have people that are elected that are in important positions down there that come from specific areas, but the decisions that's being made by these people affect the whole state. And so they really got to take responsibility. They got to make good decisions and think ahead. And I would appreciate very much if you would take under consideration what I've said and do just that. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mary Nanawak. Nunawak, please.
Good morning. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify. I want to testify against the Senate Bill 192, and I'm just going to be pointing out some things. I won't say that it appears or it seems, because things that have been related to the pipeline or to the oil companies have been very, very evident. But if you have problems, you can insert your own your quotation marks. The problems from all along, from when I first observed, have been ongoing and are not improving, but in fact they are getting worse. And the oil companies have good promises, good goals and objectives regarding how well and smoothly that the oil will benefit all of Alaskans, and as well as the federal state and local laws, but in real reality, these have not occurred. There have been numerous problems, and they are not improving, but in fact, they are getting worse. And every year, the lawmakers spent hours and hours trying to solve these problems, but they're not really getting solved. And then there are the so-called whistleblowers, and those people get into trouble, and even if these are problems, they are afraid to report the problems for fear of being reprimanded. These people should be applauded rather than having to pay for the consequences. And also that you have not really worked with the Native peoples of Alaska, the Native companies, who are intimately, very, very intimately knowledgeable with the ecosystem, the animal and plant life, contamination. And just because you guys say that their highly, highly scientific knowledge that you refer to as traditional knowledge is far, far, far more accurate than the American scientific methods. And not only do they get your knowledge from somebody else's work, and they get your knowledge from the beginning of time. And these people, the Native peoples, are very, very observant. They're very observant. They'll go out through any kind of conditions to gather their knowledge. And they teach their very, very young children their scientific knowledges and climatology and global warming, what have you.
Mary, can I get you to finish up, please?
So,
summarize.
If you worked with the Native peoples who have way, way more more accurate knowledge of these problems should be included, and not just on
Mary, could I get you to summarize, please?
On basis of that, yeah, we'll include you, but to if you work together, if you guys met halfway in between, you'll be.
Like that. Politely remind people to try to stick within their 2 minutes, please. It's not fair to have some people run on while other people are held at 2 minutes. And if your testimony is longer, you can certainly submit written testimony to the Finance Committee. And Ms. Nunawark, if you wanted to go ahead and submit that in writing, that would be greatly appreciated. We'll now go to Kathy Duxbury, please.
Hi, my name's Kathy Duxbury. I live in Anchorage, Alaska. We also own a small business and a home in Kodiak. I have a family. I have grandkids. We're hoping for a better future for them. I'm opposed to Bill 192, and I'd like to see you guys get some support behind the governor's bill. He's got the right idea. He's supporting the producers, looking to make jobs and long-term jobs and growth for the state of Alaska. It seems to me that you get down there, you don't listen to the people of the state. When we talk to you, you just listen to your select group, and you really need to make some decisions long-term. The pipeline needs to get filled back up. We need to have jobs. Our business in Kodiak is right on the ropes, because people don't have any extra income, nobody has a job. Pretty soon, Kodiak will be a ghost town. So I'd like to see you guys actually pay attention, work together as a team, and get behind the governor's bill so that we can all have a future here in this state. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll now stand at ease, please. Well, we'd like to come back on the record. We have two more citizens that have called in to testify, one in an LIO and then one outside the LIO. And just for reminders, we have public testimony starting again at 1 o'clock this afternoon. We're keeping public testimony to 2 minutes apiece, and I'd like you to hold strictly to that, please, because it's not fair to other people that if they hold to 2 minutes and others don't. And start by introducing yourself for the record and who you represent, and then speak to the bill, please. Senate Bill 192, we're going to start with Buzz Otis, please.
Good morning. My name is Buzz Otis. I live in North Pole, Alaska, and I wear a lot of hats in the community. I'm testifying on SB 192 today, and I thank you for the opportunity to do so. My concern is that Alaska is at a crossroads. I think you all realize that. There are places in the state that are really struggling economically, the interior of Alaska being one of those. We are struggling from a lack of jobs, good-paying jobs. We're struggling with high prices of electricity and fuel oil. And my feeling is that when we have a vibrant economy, although those high prices of energy affect us negatively, they don't make such an impact. We are an oil state, mining, of course, but a resource state, and we need to have tax legislation that encourages the development and exploration, development, extraction of our resources in an environmentally friendly way. I think we've got the environmentally friendly thing down, but we, quite frankly, need to fill that pipeline with oil, and I'm not sure SB 192 does that. I suggest we need legislation that encourages more production. My observation of the tax laws in the United States have been when income tax is reduced, they actually receive more taxes because people aren't afraid to produce. What we've got in the interior here is a lot of people not sure where the economy is going, and sitting on their money, they're afraid to invest. So is that 2 minutes?
Yep.
Thank you very much for my opportunity to testify, and thanks for your work in Juneau.
Thank you for calling in this morning. Next and last up, Carolyn Bowler.
Yes, good morning. My name is Caroline Bolar, and the state has been struggling. When I got here in 67, it was, compared to where we are now, it was dirt broke. And we have had moments when that has happened during the time. Certainly the infusion of oil money and mining, and let's not forget the things that are brought to us by the beauty of the state, tourism, et cetera. I realize that these other things other than oil do not bring as much, but we need to make sure that we have from the oil industry, from mining, which we're getting a pitiful amount in taxes from, that we maintain a fairness. When the first arrangements were made with our legislature, Alaska did not, like other states, tax gas in place. If that tax had been imposed, there would have been a pipeline, a gas pipeline, many, many, many months, if not years ago. The record that I have is I worked for ARA services both on the TAPS line, building of the TAPS line, and on the North Slope. After I worked briefly with my degree in broadcast journalism as a news director at the KFAR, the NBC affiliate in Fairbanks, I came to work for Standard Oil, and I worked for them for 13 years. After they were bought out by British Petroleum, I left the first time they offered a RIF. And as a news person, I have been astounded at how many people do not understand that it is Alaska's oil. It's Alaska's resources. If it's under the ground, it belongs to all Alaskans. And I'm sure you've seen the buttons stating, "It's our oil," both the buttons that people are wearing and also the television. That is one of the few ads that is there to counter all the billions of dollars available to the oil industry. To put their message out there. Even our government, our governor, in January 5th, I've got the document and be happy to pass it down, a news item that came out, they quote him directly after he met with the three gas leaders and saying that he was trying to get these companies to align between these three companies that actually own the gas. To me, it was just astounding that none of the press people picked up the fact that our governor thinks the oil industry owns the gas, owns the oil, and owns us, apparently. So I urge you folks to stay as close to taking care of Alaskans. Make sure that your memory is of someone who fought the good fight and won against giving away our future. And there are many, many people who could come up with many other ideas that would help balance this state as far as development. We didn't have the oil in 1967. It took into the early 70s for all of the things to be approved and
Caroline,
for the oil to
Caroline,
start
up,
working.
Please?
Thank you for your time. I strongly urge you to not let changes be made to what we have essentially in place now. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. That concludes this morning's portion of the public hearing. We'll reconvene at 1 p.m. Meeting adjourned.